Hello and welcome to Press X to Science, the podcast where Nintendogs meets Newton. The topic for our first episode is actually going to be Newton's laws of motion, but before we get to that, let me introduce our regular co-hosts. First up is astrophysicist and science communicator Tim Young. Hi, Tim.
Hi there.
And also joining us is industrial scientist Phil English. Hey, Phil.
Hey.
And if you want to learn more about our backgrounds, you can listen to our intro episode. So in this episode, I wanted to talk about a game that I really fell in love with called Osmos, O-S-M-O-S. Have either of you two played it, Tim or Phil?
Yes, I have played a lot of Osmos.
I certainly have, yep.
Yeah, have you finished all the levels or...?
I have definitely not finished all the levels.
No, I was just asking, because there's a few different types of levels. Maybe I'll run through that first. In Osmos, imagine that you're a bubble floating around in space and there's other bubbles around, kind of like Agario, but not quite. And it's a single-player game. It's very zen, very relaxing, and you have to float around this frictionless sort of space, and different levels have different objectives. So in some levels, you have to become the biggest bubble by absorbing other bubbles by running into them. Some levels, you're orbiting a very heavily dense bubble in the middle, and you have to become the biggest, but you can get sucked into the middle of the big one, so it's quite challenging. And other levels, there's intelligent bubbles that run away from you that you have to try and absorb by sort of cornering them into the corner of the level. Am I forgetting any, or is that it?
There's some that also try and physically attack you as well. There's some that try themselves to get bigger.
Yeah, and if they're bigger than you, they come after you.
Yeah.
So it doesn't sound much like science, but... it's really clever in that the way the gameplay works, in order for you to move forward, let's say you're trying to move to the right, you need to throw little bubbles, and you will get smaller as you do this, out to the left. So it is actually working according to Newton's laws of motion. And do either of you two remember Newton's laws of motion? I'm asking the wrong people because you're both physicists.
Oh, wow.
I was going to say, you put in your teacher voice for a second.
I know. But, I mean, I know trying to teach this, what happens is the kids end up memorizing the words and just like regurgitating the words back to you. But if you ever ask them a sort of contextual question where you're like, why is this happening? They just have no idea. And they'll just quote the words back to you.
Yeah.
And if you ask them, which law do you think this is, first, second or third? They'll just guess, 33% chance of getting it right. So
yeah.
I found it really hard to get beyond that level of understanding with them. But when we started playing this game and you're like, oh yeah, remember in Osmos when this happened and you did this, they go, oh yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a really good game for helping it click. And I know whenever I'm thinking of orbits now, I always think back to Osmos and be like, okay, what would I do in Osmos to, go to a further away orbit? Oh, I'd do this. Oh, okay, yep, that's the answer.
Other than the orbit levels, every other level is really just the absolute most purely distilled form of Newton's three laws, because that's literally all that you can do. You can either squirt bits of yourself out to make yourself move,
which one?
Which is all of
just
them.
All of the levels. Yeah, that's how you move in all of the levels.
No, and, I mean which Newton's laws?
Ah, okay. So the first one says, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. I think I've got that the right way around.
Isn't that third?
Oh, no, it is the third. Oh, no. Anyway, the third one says that. So basically, when you need to push a second one away from you in order for you to move forward. And when you look at the screen, you being the big one, you only go forward a tiny bit. But the little one you shoot at the back gets shot out really fast.
And it is bits of you, right? Like it is
bits of you because you are... If you shoot too much, you will shrink and become tiny yourself, and then everything tries to eat you because it's bigger than you. So you'll get to a point where it suggests, kindly suggests restarting the level. Because, oh, you're looking a little smaller. Do you want to restart?
You actually can't win now.
Yeah. It doesn't just go, you die or you lose. It's like, maybe you should restart.
I strongly suggest.
Yeah.
But that said, there's a a button that's bound to restart level.
Yeah.
The failing and doing it again is yeah. It's encouraged.
There were some levels that took me a long time to get there in the end.
Yeah. And also, the other thing is that some levels are physically impossible to do. And so there's another button that is restart with a new level seed. And
that gives
a bit of a randomness to the motes that are around you. Because if you just, if you get a, for example, you might end up in a level where you start off very small and you're completely surrounded by larger motes.
Actually, there was a type of puzzle or levels where there's almost like a puzzle, like where it's not a random seed, it's a set one. And it's almost like an order to absorbing the bubbles. You're surrounded by these huge ones and you kind of got to avoid them while trying to get to the little one. And they were really fun.
Yeah, those were a lot of fun too.
Yeah, I forgot about those ones. But in saying that, when you start moving, how I was saying, when you start getting really big, you start to notice the second law, which is that the force required to move you is proportional to your mass. So in order to accelerate, it's the whole F equals MA bit. Mm. When you start getting really big, you have to shoot out a lot more stuff out the back to be able to move you forward.
Also to stop moving forward. If you're coming up towards something that's going to kill you and you need to slow down, you have to start rapidly shedding huge amounts of mass, which is actually making it even worse because that means the thing that you're going to go towards is even more going to kill you than it was before.
It starts absorbing all the stuff you're shooting out. Yeah,
and right. And so because you're shooting it towards it, you actually end up having to do some really clever things like shooting out at right angles and then swapping to the other right angle. So you're shooting sort of diagonally away from it, so you're not shooting into it to make it bigger. But that's also a much less efficient way of moving. So there's lots of really interesting sort of, distillations of the physics that comes out of as a result of it.
Yeah, and sorry, the first law is something will keep going and keep doing what it's doing unless acted upon by another force. So in this, in all of these levels, it's like you're in frictionless space, so your bubble will keep moving until something else acts upon it, whether it be you bounce into the edge of the level, you hit another bubble or a remote, or you click and shoot bubbles out the back of yourself to move yourself. Otherwise, you just keep going in a straight line. So it kind of does all three all at once. And I think even the tutorial level, it wants you to stop or stay within a certain space for a short amount of time to pass the level to help you learn the controls. And so like Tim said, you start approaching this area, but then you have to slow down. So you have to start shooting stuff out the front. And it's really,
which is good because in some ways it really encourages patience as well. It's much better in this game to do things very slowly and gradually because you conserve mass if you're willing to wait and slowly creep over to the thing that you want to absorb.
And it's definitely, like I said, a relaxing game. It's not time limits or stressful at all. And the music's quite nice too.
The music is fantastic, actually. I think the music was the thing that first drew me into the game. One of the composers that wrote for it was an outfit called Gas, and they do a lot of really ephemeral, very, very sort of low-key background music, stuff that I've used in the Planetarium a lot.
That's a very appropriate name.
Gas, yeah, it is.
Yeah. Anyway, you can get the game on all sorts of platforms, including phone and tablet, but also there's a free demo on their website which just has a few of the starting levels, which is enough to give you an idea if you want to buy the game. But
it's actually cheapest on phone, I think.
Yeah,
Steam, it's still $10.
Yeah, I bought the $10 version way back when. But I think it'd be just as good on a phone or a tablet because what you need to do is just tap here and there. I think it's still very suitable for that format.
That said, even on tablet or phone, I highly recommend headphones. It's the soundtrack really does get you into the sort of the mood of being a moat. You start to feel like you're a little blob.
But yeah, I love this game because it was a commercial game, so it's engaging and motivating to play and beautiful. But it helps you develop those understandings of the science that I was trying to teach. That is really hard to understand if you're just reading it on paper as a new beginner to it, if you've never learned this stuff before or you hated it.
It's such a weird thing, right? Because people know this stuff because you experience it in the world around you, and you know they know that they know these things at a deep level, but making, like, bridging that gap between what you intuitively know from your interaction with the world and what is written on a piece of paper that actually kind of codifies that intuitive knowing, this seems like a bridge between it a little bit.
And I think for me as a teacher, with the first law, where you're like, yeah, things will just keep going unless another force acts upon them, they're like, everyone's, no they don't, things just, you know, come to a stop. And then you're kind of like, yeah, but we live in a world where there's friction, so the friction is slowing it down, but you can't see the friction, or it's hard to experience it, so it's harder to get the understanding of the first one. Newton's first law. So having this game where it's acting in a sort of almost frictionless area, that works really well for helping with that understanding.
The other tough thing with that sort of teaching as well is that most of the time when you're on in a haptic hands-on situation, you know, like in a classroom, the way to best show these things is usually by demonstrating, like, for example, rolling cars, because they move easier than a block of wood with nothing, right?
Yeah.
Like the friction is much more noticeable on just a random thing. But as soon as you add a wheel to the equation, you're talking about a whole nother realm of really interesting physics that goes on with rolling friction and like directionality of wheels and that kind of stuff. So it's much harder to see the direct, like the pure part of the physics.
Yeah.
Than what you get with the game.
And there's lots of, sorry, I was going to say, there's lots of simulations online and stuff, but they're just not as engaging as playing this game.
And if you look at other games as well, we experience all three of Newton's laws in almost every game we play to an extent, but in order to make the game fun, they really, really mess with them.
Oh, yeah. I think, Phil, you're saying one of your favorite games is Super Meat Boy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that has completely messed up physics. I mean, if you actually, you know, take the friction that the, you know, little blob of meat that is your character is experiencing, it's totally separate from what we would experience in the physical world, and you know, stuff like
and largely inconsistent as well.
Yeah, pretty inconsistent depending on what he's doing.
Look at platformers of any kind.
Mm.
The rate at which they jump and the rate at which they fall quite often don't prescribe a parabola, which is what it would be if you were using pure physics.
Mm.
But they change those speeds of jump and fall and the way that you can move, especially being able to move mid-air with no kickoff point as well.
Mm. I think he's Super Meat Boy, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think that the interesting thing about Osmos in particular is the fact that it is pretty close to a pure physics mechanic. In terms of like, they don't do it, it's such a simple mechanic, like, you know, there's only, you know, two or three things that you really have to keep track of at any one time. Mostly, like, most of your interaction is just firing off these little motes to you know, manipulate Newton's laws. For such a simple mechanic, they managed to make a really engaging and interesting and fun game around it. So it's interesting to see both of those sides. Like, you've got that really simple mechanic making a deep interaction versus, you know, heaps of other games that don't use physics at all but still kind of need to approximate them in order to make the world feel understandable. Like it wouldn't be a fun game if you press the jump button and like your character just did something really weird, like moved sideways and then jumped up and then fell to the ground all in one movement kind of thing, like in a really janky movement. Like, you have to have some kind of physics in there, but it's how much do you do? And this seems like they've gone 100%, like, full physics.
Full physics.
And it's still fun.
Yeah, and I haven't seen many others doing, like what you said, the same thing, like full realistic physics and still being fun. A lot of the realistic ones, and there's not that many of them, aren't there to be fun. or they're a simulation rather than a game. So
yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I know another game that I think highlights this sort of concept, but in a slightly more complicated, different way, is Kerbal Space Program, which I know Tim has played a lot of.
How many hundreds of hours?
My Steam stats are to be believed.
Yeah, something up around 500 or 600, isn't it?
I mean, the physics.
No, it's well over 1,000.
Oh my goodness. Oh dear. I haven't played it that much, but I know the physics in Kerbal is pretty realistic, and you build a rocket to go to the moon and you have to actually build it in such a way that it will work with the real world physics in the game, and it gives you the tools, you know, like data readouts and things in order to be able to do that. But it's interesting that you need some understanding of the science, or you learn it, you know, through failure, in order to be able to succeed at, you know, winning the game, or, you know, getting to the moon.
Yeah. I mean, and so Kerbal's an interesting one because it's a game that, unlike Osmos was just released. Kerbal was one of those Minecraft style of releases where, you know, it starts off in early alpha and it's quite cheap, but very, very buggy, very minimalistic, very limited capability. And then as time goes on, they add more features and they further refine it and complete it more and more, raise the price a little bit as they go along and gain a bigger following. So the physics in the game has actually evolved drastically over the course of, you know, the 100 or so patches that they've put out. And that includes things like, for example, aerodynamics is only a fairly recent addition to the game when you compare it to, you know, the length of its launch history. Before that, anything done in unintentional, but I'll take it. If you look at the aerodynamics early on, it was just a very thick, soupy coefficient that was just added in because they're like, look, you know, the aim of the game isn't to be in the atmosphere. The aim of the game is to be in space.
Mm.
And they wanted to make a really different feel about being in air versus being in space. So they just chucked in this huge, soupy coefficient that meant that, you know, while you were in the air, almost anything was aerodynamic, which is true in real life as well. I mean, if you make a brick move fast enough, it'll fly. But this was way, way over the top. And it wasn't until they started adding in some of these more advanced sort of bits of coding and algorithms and stuff that the realistic aerodynamics started to come out.
It's almost become like rocket ship simulator, you know, NASA simulator.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what it was always meant to be. It wasn't meant to be about flying in atmospheres. The problem was that people kept doing it. So they were like, well, I guess we got to accommodate some of these people. And because it was such a hugely open modding game, modding community game, people wrote in their own aerodynamics. And there was a very famous mod called FAR, which was all about adding in realistic aerodynamics, and that was largely used as the template for when the developers added it into the core game as well. But the interesting thing about Kerbal is that it's the opposite of Osmos in that it gives you no tools to learn. It gives you no tutorial, no gradual system of levels. You just get one big sandbox with a million components, and it's up to you to sort of figure out how everything works through play.
And I think I struggled a little with that.
Oh, I think a lot of people did. I think the people who could jump in straight away and just do it were those people who had aeronautics PhDs. Like, it's not intuitive for any person to go, I'll just slap these things together and we're fine.
I understood what to do, and I understood a lot of the data I was seeing, but I just didn't, like, I sat there going, I know the basic parts of the rocket I need to put in there, but I'm not sure. None of mine got to the moon. And then I just sort of played other games. You know, it's because, like you said, it was just smack bang. Here it is. It's all there. Yeah.
But this is where we get the phrase, it's not exactly rocket science from. It turns out the rocket science is really hard.
But I really like the Kerbal, little alien Kerbal characters that sit in your cockpit, and you have this cockpit view as you're flying your rocket.
And I think that if it didn't have that Pixar sort of aspect to it, it wouldn't be anywhere near as successful as it is.
I wouldn't have played it for as long.
Absolutely.
It is just ridiculously adorable.
Yeah.
But the crazy thing about Kerbal Space Program is that once you do start to understand things, and maybe you've gone on YouTube and maybe you've got on some textbooks to read up on orbital dynamics, but once you start to get a grasp on how these things are working, you actually do start to learn really interesting things as a result. So it was very, very shortly after I made my first orbit, which took me ages, by the way, like like you, it took me a good 2 dozen hours before I got something to orbit, just orbit Kerbin at all.
Yeah, I found
mine. But once you do,
mine kept I'd start a spin, a small spin.
Yeah.
Like one I didn't want, and it'd just get bigger and bigger, and I'd just be tumbling out of control really quickly.
Which is a problem in real life. It's
yes,
called
yeah.
overdamped oscillation.
Anyway, continue. You got to orbit, finally.
Yeah, you get to orbit, and then you start to, because you have such granular control over how everything's working, you make small adjustments to your system, and you see the results that happen as a result of it. And I actually started to learn things that university failed to teach me, things that were actually taught at university, but I obviously didn't have anywhere near as good of a grasp on as I should have. But the game let me sort of experience it in a very visceral way.
I think, like you said, incredible. It's that learning through failing and failing often.
Yeah. Oh, so often.
Yeah.
But also because the failing is fun, because your rocket explodes.
And you're killing all your Kerbals. How many Kerbals have you killed? I want to know. I'm
practically a Pol Pot at this stage.
So if we start wrapping up, feel impressions on Osmos, Newton, and Kerbal.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you guys have hit the nail on the head in terms of the fact that these games, you know, they do provide you a fun way of failing and of exploring these different, you know, pretty complicated, as Tim said, like you can read very advanced, very advanced textbooks. Exactly. You can read really advanced textbooks on these subjects and apply them directly to the game. Like that's pretty incredible. If this had been around at university when I was going through, it would be very, very useful to go through this kind of stuff while also studying physics, because it gives you that, I don't know, it's almost like a hands-on experience, right? So, yeah. I think they're really, really, really good. And as you've said, Megan, like, you know, kids do react to them and people do engage them and it can affect their learning. So, yeah, more.
But do you think the steep, either of you two, Tim or Phil, do you think with Kerbal, with the new tutorials and stuff, do you think that the realistic physics and stuff is getting in the way of having fun for some people?
I think it can.
Yeah, I think it's certainly got potential.
People have definitely, the people who I've spoken to have tried the game and gone, it's not for me.
Mm. Yeah.
It's just too hard. I don't know what's going on. And they don't have the time in their day-to-day life to spend, you know, to buy a whiteboard.
Yeah.
Whereas I love games where whiteboards are optional.
I like the games where you scribble these notes on a pad, as you know, puzzle games and things, and you look back like a week later or a year later and you're like, oh, this looks like a crazy person's rant. So I can imagine doing that with Kerbal, like writing all these numbers down and equations and diagrams.
Having to do actual
like
maths and perform the rocket equation and go, well, hang on, how much thrust do I need now?
Yeah. What's my weight ratio? Yeah.
So summing up, if you're not a physicist or you're not trying to be a physicist, Osmos is a great game to play on your mobile phone. You will learn a little bit of Newton's laws through playing, even if you don't intend to, because that's what you need to do in order to win. So that's a really nice introduction to a little bit of science sort of snuck in there. Whereas if you want a bit more of a challenge, Kerbal Space Program is definitely worth checking out, building rockets and sending them into space. Very realistic, a bigger learning curve. But I think if you, like Tim said, if you stick with it, it's worth it. If that's what you're into.
I think the greatest part of Kerbal Space, like if you're not a big gamer and this is your first sort of foray into these types of games, this is the greatest game to just jump on YouTube, type in some keywords like Kerbal Space Program and tutorial would be a good one. But actually go through and have a watch of some of the videos that people have put out. Like, I mean, Scott Manley, another astrophysicist, does a huge YouTube channel almost entirely devoted to Kerbal Space Program. Mm. There's lots of other scientists who have used the game to teach, but they're actually genuinely entertaining videos on their own. So go out and watch them and then learn a bit, go back and play a bit more of the game. And then the game just starts to let you choose your own goals, to choose your own rewards. I think that's probably the most empowering part of that game.
That sounds great. I'm going to leave it there, otherwise we will keep talking forever. So remember to share the episode through word of mouth, social media, rate us on iTunes. And if you have any questions, comments, and feedback, you can contact us at questions@pressx2.science. Also, we'll have links to the games, all the games that we've mentioned, and that YouTube channel Tim mentioned about the Kerbal stuff that you can check out as well. Thanks for listening.